Hello and welcome to a new episode of Bitcoin, Fiat and Rock and Roll. As many of you know, we have decided to switch completely to English with this podcast and to allow an international audience to follow as well. And this is also why our guest and the topic of today's podcast fit perfectly, even though we have actually agreed to do this podcast while we were still a German-speaking podcast. But Julian Lieniger, the CEO of Relay, and our guest today is flexible enough to switch to English. So first, thanks, Julian, for being here today and for doing the podcast with us.
Thank you, Alex, for inviting me. And of course, flexibility is key, right?
That's it. And I have heard that you are planning with Relay your European expansion. So I would even say it's a perfect fit today that we make this available to people outside the German, Switzerland, Austria region.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. But it's interesting that, you know, EU expansion is including all these countries with all these different languages, and actually none of them is English speaking, right?
So yeah,
the UK expansion, of course, needs to unfortunately still wait a bit. But that's one of the challenges, right? We can't, of course, cover all the different languages, but English, I guess, is good enough, right?
Yeah, I definitely want to know more about this expansion, also the hurdles you see and the complexities and the regulation. We're going to discuss that later. And we will also talk a bit more about you personally later. I just want to make sure that I get the main facts right about you. So you are Swiss. That's maybe the first interesting fact. Where exactly in Switzerland have you been born?
Yes, I'm born and raised in a very small town called Arberg, which, with like 4, maybe now 5,000 inhabitants in the canton of Bern, so close to the capital city of Switzerland in Bern. And I still live in this canton, just in another smaller city called Biel, which is basically, a town between Bern and Zurich, and we have our offices in Zurich. But yeah, I my upbringing is in a very small countryside village with 4,000 or 5,000 people.
Yeah, and it's funny that you say a small village with 4,000 or 5,000 people, because for Swiss standards, I would say that's already at least a town, if not a city, right? If it's 4,000 or 5,000 people.
Yeah, it's definitely not a city. I think a city would be from 15,000 onwards.
Okay.
Call yourself a city, but yeah, it's a town. It's maybe not a village. It's true, because yeah. So actually, where I really grew up and did kindergarten was in Kappelen, just next to Arberg. Which, and they, when I grew up there, it was like 900 people.
So okay,
this was definitely a small village. But then, yeah, if you talk to an American, like 4,000 or 5,000 people is not even a village.
For no, it's
them,
true.
Right? Yeah,
true.
It depends on the perspective.
So a young Swiss citizen, currently at the age of, in your early 30s, I believe, right?
Yeah, 32.
32. I once heard that you became a Bitcoiner in 2015, so roughly 10 years ago. So how does a young Swiss guy in his early 20s, coming from a small village in Switzerland, become a Bitcoiner? So early, actually, 2015.
Yeah, actually, talking to a friend of mine. A friend of mine was a techie. I'm not a techie. I have studied psychology and business administration. Actually, at the time, I was, I think, in my first year of university, very interested in psychology, but also in business, and so also in, you know, stuff like finance, trading, stocks, etc. Just got into this whole thing beginning of my 20s. And I was sitting in the living room of a friend of mine who's a techie. He was a pure techie. He studied computer science, and he was one of the people, because I knew him from first grade, and already in first or second grade, his parents had a computer. He was one of the only guys that had a computer. I feel really old now talking about this, but back then no one really had a computer. My mom got a computer when I was in like probably fourth grade or something. And then we started exchanging emails, but he had a head start of a few years. So, and he was always super interested in computers. And so we were gaming a little bit and like just talking in this, I think it was summer or spring 2015 in his living room. And then we started talking about cryptocurrency somehow, and he showed me Bitcoin. He owned like 10 or 12 different coins, and he showed them to me. He showed me Bitcoin, but he showed me these other coins, and they don't even exist anymore.
Yeah. And there were, 2015, we did not have 20,000 cryptocurrencies, right? We maybe had 100 at best. I can't remember. So he was quite active if you already own.
Yeah.
He was a very early shitcoiner, apparently.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Ethereum wasn't even there yet. Ethereum was launched, I think, 2016. So it's, I believe, like Nemcoin, I think, was pretty big back then. It's he had all these, meme coins were already a thing back then. There were these coins with these flashy logos that had no, that there was no purpose for it at all. It's just jokes. But anyway, he showed it to me and I was fascinated by this kind of blockchain technology and just having an asset that basically every second has a new price. So it's a kind of, you can trade it 24/7, you can hold it yourself, you are independent from banks and governments, no one can kind of seize it or freeze it or confiscate it from you, no one can block transactions, no one can just print more of it, you know. So I was and you can trade it 24/7, you can buy stuff on the internet, you can take it wherever you want, transact worldwide. It's a super global digital sort of asset or money or whatever. And I found it super fascinating, so I went out and kind of did my research, and a week later I asked him to buy a Bitcoin for me because I tried, but it was too complicated for me. Again, I was not a techie, right? It's too complicated. So I gave him a Bitcoin. It was like $500 then. So I gave him 500 Swiss francs. Like, I went to the bank, withdrew 500 Swiss francs in cash.
It was an OTC transaction, so to say.
Yeah exactly. He bought one Bitcoin for me for $500. But unfortunately, I sold it again when it was up 10%. So he gave me back 550. I thought it was a great trade.
I can definitely relate to that. I did that a lot. And I was already kind of fascinated by you kind of seeing that so early, that it's fascinating that it's like a 24/7 globally available asset. Because when I started, got into Bitcoin, for me, it was just another speculative asset to buy and sell. And that's what I did for a couple of years. So I'm also regretting that now, of course, but I guess that's how there are very, very few people that kind of invested very early and still have these Bitcoins.
Exactly. No, I also didn't get it in the sense that I wanted to start investing because I believe in 10 years, it's going to be 100K, right? I definitely didn't see coming, right? But I thought it was interesting, and I kept learning about it and reading about it, you know, listening to podcasts. And then 2017, I was in Silicon Valley doing the exchange semester when I did my master degree. And
cool. Where exactly have you been there?
In Marin County. It was a small town called San Rafael, 10 kilometers north of San Francisco. And a small university, Dominican University of California, was 2,000 students.
Nice.
Which they call a small university. and then this was 2017, summer to fall, to winter. And that was exactly when there was this bubble and hype.
Close to 20K, right?
Yeah, 2017 started with 1 or 2K per Bitcoin and ended with 20K Bitcoin. And I was there. It was really fun, you know, a lot of energy, a lot of conferences, a lot of ICO launch party kind of stuff, a lot of new podcasts, a lot of new articles and blog posts every day and press releases and stuff like that. So it was super interesting also to be there at the heart of the Silicon Valley, the entrepreneurial startup scene. And then that was, I think, where it really clicked, because I look back in 2 years, a lot has happened actually, because 2 years ago, when I got into it, no one was really understanding it. No one's really into it. No one's interested. If you asked 10 people on the street, no one knew about cryptocurrencies. And then in 2017, maybe at least half of the people would know about cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin. And so
it was the first time, sorry to interrupt you, I think it was false for me the first time when it kind of, when I realized, I think it major news channels, right? Like the 8 p.m. news in Switzerland and Germany, they started reporting about bits. They started mentioning Bitcoin. I can still remember the day when it was the first time in the Tagesschau in Switzerland and also in Germany when they started mentioning Bitcoin, and it was around that time.
Yeah, absolutely crazy. And then I thought, okay, if that's kind of if it already exists, for a few years. So it started really in 2009 and 10. And in 2015, it went from 10 cents to $500. So more and more people were interested. And only 2 years later, even more people were interested. So it looked to me like kind of an exponential growth journey, this whole thing. And so I was just more and more convinced. And that's when I then started, probably to the end of 17, beginning of 18, to look at it very seriously and really starting investing money. I still did a lot of shit with ICOs and altcoins and stuff like that. Still wasn't really Bitcoin only, but I started to invest long-term and believe in it as a really disruptive revolutionary technology and asset. So that was a good moment for me, because I really finally understood it. Yeah.
Before we jump back to today's episode, let us introduce the Digital Euro Conference 2025 to you, a must-attend event on the future of digital money. Taking place on March 27th in Frankfurt and online, DEC 25 brings together leading voices and organizations shaping the financial landscape. Confirmed participants include representatives from various central banks, such as Deutsche Bundesbank and the central banks of Brazil, South Korea, Netherlands, and others, as well as stablecoin issuers, banks, companies from the industries, startups, etc. With a cutting-edge agenda covering retail and wholesale CBDCs, stablecoins, tokenized deposits, and tokenized money in general, this is your opportunity to connect with industry leaders driving the future of finance. You want to participate? As an official event partner, with the code BFRR20, you get 20% off the official ticket price. So to buy your ticket, you have to go to the official website at digital-euros-conference.de, insert the code BFRR20, and then you can basically claim and get your discounted ticket. So for more information, please check out the show notes. And now back to today's episode.
Yeah. And then fast forward 2 to 3 years in, I think it was 2020, you together with, I think, one of your colleagues, Adam, founded Relay. So let's maybe dive into what is Relay. I think you once said that Relay wants to bring Bitcoin to the masses. I'm not sure if that's still kind of your vision, and maybe you can explain how do you want to achieve this, bringing Bitcoin to the masses?
That's absolutely still our mission. We want to bring as many Bitcoin to as many people as possible. And we basically do that by just making it super easy for normal people out there to get started with Bitcoin. Because at the beginning, when we started 2020, so I was already into Bitcoin maybe 5 years. And so people started to, of course, ask me, okay, Julian, you know about this Bitcoin thing. Can you help me buy it, right? So more and more people wanted to get some Bitcoin, get access to Bitcoin, but it turned out to be super hard for like normal people. Like not everyone is a techie or a finance geek, right? For these people, there were the tools they used, you know, they could buy Bitcoin. I was able to, you know, have an exchange and buy Bitcoin at this point, but 90% of the people, you know, construction workers, carpenters, people that just work in an office, hairdressers, taxi drivers, these guys, they had no idea how to buy Bitcoin, but they wanted, the need was there. And so
I think it's also maybe for like the international audience that might not kind of have an insight into this. It's also in Switzerland, but even more so in Germany, I believe many people don't invest at all, right? It's not like in the US where everyone kind of, it's totally normal to invest into equity and stocks and everything, like in the, say, Europe, maybe even Europe overall. I don't have a good insight into other European countries. It's like the share of people investing is very small or relatively small. And that's, of course, I mean, Bitcoin is just another way. If you have to open an account somewhere, you have to like pre-fund that account with money. You have to then click on buy and sell. Maybe there's even such a thing like a limit or market order, and that's way too complex for most people.
Absolutely, exactly. You describe it exactly right. And we wanted to make Bitcoin accessible, and still today, we want to make Bitcoin accessible for those people. We just wanted to make it super simple. You know, you can download an app within a few clicks. You have your account, you have your Bitcoin wallet, and you can buy, sell, set up a savings plan weekly or monthly, you know, automate your investment. You can get your Bitcoin, hold your Bitcoin, track your Bitcoin, and send and receive and pay with your Bitcoin. Basically, everything you want to do with Bitcoin just on one very simple mobile app. That was where it started. And now we kind of branch out to other customer segments as well. So we now serve not only like small retail investors, like these people on the street, but also high net worth individuals with Relay Private. So these are people that want to invest 100K, 200K, half a million, bigger amounts, but also just in an easy way. Bitcoin only, they, you know, a Swiss brand, they trust, regulated, and self-custodial, so they want to hold it themselves. These are our three core principles as well. And even businesses. So a bit more than a year, we also started with Relay Business. Around 150 to 200 businesses now are already onboarded and have added Bitcoin to their balance sheet. So basically, it's really about making it super easy for different customer groups to get into Bitcoin, because we believe we're still very early in this journey. Only like 8 to 10% of Europeans own Bitcoin. For businesses, it's even much less. And so we believe that in the next 10 years, this will change and it will be closer to 50% of people and businesses. And that's what we want to help make happen. So what you said initially, yes, we want to bring Bitcoin to the masses. Absolutely.
Cool. So there were two main. So I'm an avid user of Relay. I've been a client for many years, and there were two reasons why I started using Relay. And you were one of the first and only ones who offered these two features at the beginning. The first one was a really easy way to set up a savings plan. So just I'm a lazy guy. I know there may be even cheaper ways to say I go to one of these professional exchanges and buy Bitcoin every month, but I won't do it, right? I'm too lazy. I will forget it. So for me, it was super important to just have someone who takes care of that. And I just set it up once and then it's running. So that was like number one. And number two for me was that it's really non-custodial, so that I have the Bitcoins actually directly on my wallet. So that was the two reasons why I started using Relay. I know you have a bit more competition in that space today. And would you still say that this is kind of what makes Relay, that it's savings plans capabilities, but also this non-custodial setup?
Yeah, absolutely. There are a few more things as well. So what we did, basically, we asked the product market fit question, the so-called Sean Ellis score. This is a very nice, just one question that you ask your active users and you get the result of whether you have hit product market fit or not. So if your product is good enough to scale yet or not. And this question is, how would you feel if you could no longer use Relay or the product tomorrow, right? And so if 40% of the people say they would be very disappointed if they could no longer use Relay, then you hit product market fit. In our case, it was even more than 60%. Which is cool. And only few people said, well, I would be kind of, I don't care. And some said, you know, I wouldn't care at all if it's back tomorrow. But so more than 60% said, yes, I'd be very disappointed. So that's a great first step. But then these people that are active, avid Relay users, as you also described, thank you for your trust. Then we ask them a further question of, okay, what is it that makes you use Relay and not another company? And indeed, the number one reason was self-custodial, because this is really something that we don't really have much competition. Most other competition are custodial, so they hold the Bitcoin on behalf of the customers. That comes with a lot, you know, that comes with counterparty risk and all the other things. And you can really only use Bitcoin as it's intended to be, with all the benefits, if you use it in a non-custodial way, and that gets more and more popular. So these people that want self-custodial actual Bitcoin and they want to control it, they like Relay because of that. Then it also, the second reason was that we're Bitcoin only. So self-custodial, Bitcoin only. And the number three is that we're Swiss made. So this Swiss brand, Swiss regulation. And people also mentioned the just simplicity, user-friendliness. You can just automate, as you said, savings plan. And then number five was low fees, where actually there are ways you can buy Bitcoin much cheaper. but it's probably what they mean is, okay, it's so easy and you can just automate things. You have one fee for all of these things. You know, you don't have to add a withdrawal or whatever. Just with a few clicks, you get your Bitcoin automatically to your own wallet where you own the things, and it's just not complicated. And for that, you only pay 1% or even a bit less than 1%. So these are the five reasons why people like Relay and why we are kind of the leading Bitcoin only broker in Europe, even though of course there are a set of competitors that maybe focus on other stuff. But if you're looking for a Bitcoin only app, self custodial, Swiss made, super easy and rather cheap, that's also what we are optimized for, right?
Yeah. So I mean, I understand that there is definitely like demand from the retail side and people that are just happy kind of storing Bitcoins themselves. Now you mentioned that you're also like high net worth individuals and even businesses. Is it really the case that businesses, in particular businesses, I would assume, are they looking for non-custodial setups, or are you also thinking about maybe building custodial solutions for these businesses going forward?
Yeah, indeed. It's super interesting. I don't know what it is. I really don't know whether this is just the main need out there in the market, that high net worth individuals and businesses really want the Bitcoin and can control it themselves. Or maybe the reason is because we, of course, position ourselves now for 5 years. You know, what we say is we are Bitcoin only. There are no other coins on our platform. We are self-custodial. So it's not about, we don't take custody and we're Swiss made. These are the three things that we're just hammering down. This is our message. This is our brand, right? So the people that we, the people and businesses that we attract, you know, that they are probably maybe also kind of trained for it already by us or primed for that message. But indeed, we don't have a lot of businesses or high net worth individuals that ask for other coins, for example, or ask us to do custody. So it's really these people that are on the same value line. They want Bitcoin and Bitcoin only, and they want to take self-custody. And for them, we are the perfect partner. And I also think, you know, there are second order effects of that. We can just be much faster and simpler in onboarding for both retail clients, private clients, and business clients. We onboard a high net worth individual that wants to invest 1 million within 24 hours. A business that wants to take 500,000 of Bitcoin on balance sheet, we onboard them in 48 hours. And that's not, you cannot get this anywhere with, for example, you know, Bitpanda or any other custodial multi-coin exchange, because they have such a different set of regulatory requirements, and the onboarding processes are like, for a business that wants to invest 500,000, several weeks. For a business that wants to invest 50K or 100K, not even possible, because it's too small for them, because it would be too much effort and work for them to even onboard this kind of SME business. And so we can lower this threshold and increase the speed of the onboarding a lot because we are Bitcoin only and self-custodial.
And do you think this speed and agility is going to change, of course, to the negative potentially if you now become regulated? I know you're trying to achieve regulation under the markets and crypto assets regulation. I assume it's like one of these crypto asset service provider licenses you're trying to get. Do you feel like that this might be slowing you down going forward because there are just more requirements and rules you have to follow?
I actually don't think so. So from based on the visibility we have currently, and we're in the middle, or I mean, hopefully at the end of the process of getting the MiCA license in France. We already have a company there, and we have submitted all the files. We're in back and forth now with hopefully the last communications we have with the regulators there, and we expect in Q1 or Q2 this year the license. So we already know kind of all the processes, the monitoring systems that needs to be in place, the certifications, and then, of course, the requirements that we will have. One of them is, of course, that all users need to be KYC'd. That's something that we have now already implemented. So there are a few things of course, that you know, are a bit more cumbersome than before in Switzerland, but it's not like a crazy amount of new regulation. It's a lot, but not on the user side. For the user, and that's exactly, again, because we don't deal with like potential security coins, DeFi coins, other altcoins, meme coins, etc. We don't deal with all that, right? We don't have liquidity farming or some sort of you know, dividend-like schemes, and we don't take custody on behalf of the customer. If you're just Bitcoin only self-custodial, it makes it super easy also for the regulator. And so there are no crazy restrictions that others and requirements that others might have. There's a lot on the business. So for us as a business to get this license was, we still don't have it, touch wood, hopefully we get it soon. But the whole application process was very expensive, involved a lot of work from different outside lawyers and accountants and auditors, and just a lot of work internally as well. We hired a full team of regulatory risk management, legal compliance people. And we have written, I think, more than 100 different policies, implemented a lot of monitoring systems. We had to get certain certifications, ISO certifications, cybersecurity audits that we had to do. You know, I could go on and on and on. It was a lot of work, but for the user, not much will change, other than, of course, they have to go through the KYC process, which since October, every user has to do anyway, here also in Switzerland, by the way.
That makes sense. And I think you have to go, I mean, that's good news, I guess, for all the users. And just on your point with that regulation, I and the license, you have to go through that once to really understand what it means, right? It's crazy. And of course, I also do that as part of my job. And it's unbelievable. I mean, you hand in like hundreds, if not thousands of pages of paper. It takes months, if you have bad luck, even years to get this license, a lot of back and forth with a regulator. So good to hear that it at least feels close for you. And I mean, in particular, the French regulator has already handed out the first MiCA licenses, right? They are known to be rather on the quick end for a tier one regulator, I would say. Was that a conscious decision to say we go to France instead of, I mean, I don't want to name one of these smaller countries, but there are satellite countries in Europe that have a bit, let's say, more open and friendly regulators that have not the same reputation, of course, as the French or the German regulator.
Absolutely. We see this as quite key for the long-term future of the company. You know, we want to grow really big and be international. And I think they're the foundation of just having solid countries where you are regulated. So the goal would be to be regulated properly in Switzerland, in France, and then in England, right, the UK. That, I think, is a kind of a cornerstone for future growth. It makes it short term a bit harder. It's going to take longer. It's going to be more costly than if you do it with one of these, as you call them, satellite jurisdictions. But in the end, it's just a much better look also for future investors, for big clients, and just for partners like banking partners, payment service providers, exchanges, etc., etc. It's just a different look if you're regulated in France, basically the second biggest country, or also most recognized country from a regulatory perspective in Europe, than if you, again, are in one of these small countries. It's going to make things easier long term, even though it's kind of harder short term. But I think this hard work is gonna be worth it. And France specifically has made a lot of great development lately in becoming this startup hub, fintech hub, and also Bitcoin and crypto hub from a regulatory perspective. So they from the beginning said, we want to be early, we want to attract these companies, we want to make it fast and relatively easy, but also very compliant, you know, for them to get the license. And so big companies like Coinbase, Circle, Binance, they all made this decision for their kind of Europe expansion to get regulated there. And that was also then helping us make this decision. And in terms of Mika specifically, what a lot of people don't know is that France basically drafted the AMF. So the regulator in France basically drafted the Mika regulation. It was not Germany or any other country. It was really France. And so if you get the French Mika license, it's basically like one-to-one the Mika license, because if you always need to get a local license first, right? If you get the license in, let's say, Austria or Liechtenstein or whatever, then yes, you get this local license, but then there's usually a big gap between the local license and the Mika license. So then the second step to kind of transform this local license into a Mika license is sometimes even more work than to get the license in the first place. And for us, there will be pretty much no gap. Once we get this license, which is hard to get, then pretty much automatically, or maybe within a few weeks, we will get the Mika license as well. And so it was from the beginning a conscious decision for us to go to France.
You already mentioned this KYC discussion. And of course, you started as a small startup that I believe in the beginning you had no or a very light KYC approach, right? So I think it was possible to buy up to 1K or so of 1K Swiss francs or euro worth of Bitcoin each day, I believe, right? 100K per year. Mm-hmm. And then you, at one point, you decided, okay, we consciously decide to go down this regulated route because it might close some doors, but it also opens a lot of doors, right? And you're a Bitcoiner, you know the Bitcoin space well. A lot of Bitcoiners are very skeptical about anything like regulated KYC and everything. So I could imagine that was a big fight for you, maybe within yourself, but also with the community. How did that go? Did you have some really tough conversations? How did you get to that conclusion, that decision, that's the right thing to do in the end?
Yeah. So for us, it comes down to principles again. And I'm coming from the absolute, like from the Bitcoin side and not from the TradFi regulated side, whatever. I find it really cool to have this free money, you know, that is, you know, coming from libertarian and Austrian economics basics and crypto anarchist basics as well, where, you know, you want to be as free as possible and as sovereign as possible, etc., with the least amount of regulation possible, etc. I'm coming definitely from that perspective as well. But from a business perspective, look, the principle was always, let's try to be as light as possible on regulation, but let's be a regulated company, because in order to grow to a global company and have millions of customers and bringing, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Bitcoins to people at scale, you need to be regulated. Like there's no other way. Otherwise, because you're a company, you're not Bitcoin. Bitcoin can get away with this because it's decentralized open source technology. But as a company, you just get shut down, right? So yes, let's try to be as lean as possible and try to get away with as much as possible, but still be regulated. And that's what we did. And basically, it was not really a business decision. It was that we start doing KYC. We were basically forced to. I mean, we knew that with Mika, there's no way to do no KYC or light KYC. There's just, you know, if someone even buys 1 euro worth of Bitcoin with you, needs to go through the whole KYC process. And so we already knew beginning of last year that from now, basically 2025, when Mika is in place, we need to have a KYC process for all of our users from EU countries. And even though we don't actively market in EU countries, because currently we are only licensed in Switzerland, so we only work on this reverse solicitation model. We're not actively trying to acquire users in, for example, Germany or France or Italy or all these EU countries, but we passively are able to, you know, be
open. I can download the app, I can buy Bitcoin, but you're just not, I won't see any commercial on the TV or any German website from you.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how it is. And so in order to, so we had to go into that Mika license thing and get regulated. And so we knew that when Mika is coming, we need this KYC process for all users out of EU countries. And this is actually organically currently like 80% of our users. Only 20% of our users, even though we're actively marketing in Switzerland and not outside, only 20% of our users, because Switzerland is small, right? And we speak the same language as Germany and Austria. So actually most of the users come from there, but also French and Italian are also Swiss languages. So we have these websites and these and the app also supports these languages. So a lot of users are coming already from these countries.
Therefore, so how many users do you have in total?
In total now, it's around 140,000 active users.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. And you said 20% in Switzerland. And then what second is Germany, France, Italy?
Yeah, it's Germany, Italy, then Switzerland. And then I think Austria, France, and probably Spain. And then there's the long tail of the other,
the other
countries. But then the thinking was, okay, we need KYC for 80% of the users anyway, right? Then once we also have the MiCA license, we can actually start doing active marketing. Well, this number will go up to 90, 95, maybe 99%. Right? So all of a sudden, Switzerland will not be like a very, very big market for us anymore. And if the regulation is different, would it make sense to really fight for this, you know, 1 to 10% in the future Swiss, that the people that they can do the non-KYC when actually 90% of the users plus anyway need to do the KYC. So that was then the decision, along with the anticipation that we already knew from FINMA and from VGF, our regulators, that it will also come in Switzerland. This full KYC thing, sooner or later, it will also come in Switzerland. So that was then the decision, okay, we can stop fighting. It doesn't make sense anymore to invest a lot of resources in trying to still protect this no KYC thing for Swiss users, which are the minority. And I think now it's even faster than we thought. So I think even this year, it will be enforced also by Swiss regulators.
Okay. And of course, all your existing users had to go through this KYC. Then do you have a number on how many of the existing users did that and how many have not done that yet? And potentially, of course, you could lose some of these clients as well.
Definitely. Messy process. You know, not everyone will do it. We're now like 50-50. So I think we're at pretty much 72,000 registered users now. And the others are either not active anymore, because, you know, maybe they started using Relay 4 years ago and they stopped 2 years ago. So they're maybe not even active anymore at all. And then there's definitely this category of people that just don't want to register and they now try to find other ways to buy Bitcoin in a more anonymous way or whatever without getting registered. So I believe we still make every day like conversions from old active users that are still no KYC, but then now decide to keep using the app and do the registration. But it's maybe 80-20. So 80% are actually new users that just download the app, quickly do the KYC and start using us. Maybe this number will, the number of registered users will definitely grow and eventually outgrow the active users now.
I wanted to ask, what's the growth of users you have currently every year? I mean, let's say, you know, 72 that have really registered are registered on your platform, have gone through that KYC. How quickly is that number increasing each year?
So the registered users, we haven't really measured before, right? But I can talk about like total active users, monthly active users. And these basically, along with other important metrics for us, like trading volume, revenue, asset active users, app downloads, all these metrics are basically anywhere between 2 and 3x. Per year, the last 4 years actually, consistently. So the active users are the hardest, monthly active users are the hardest to grow, but they grow at like 2x. And then we have managed to grow volume and revenue even more aggressively, more like 3x every year.
So the fees, I believe, like 1%, or what's the fee currently to buy Bitcoin at Relay?
We initiated a new pricing policy, so new fee and also referral commission system. There's basically now a 1% fee, and if you have a referral code, it's 10% discount, so you're at 0.9% fee.
And we have one, of course. I didn't mention that, but I should plug it maybe now. It's a Rock, right? R-O-C-K. And it's actually a nice thing for you to change that, because I believe now in the beginning, I think it was that you only profited for a couple of months, right? When you people applied through your referral call, but now it's like a continuous thing, right?
So the whole story here again is, and that's again like community, Bitcoiners, some like it, some not, etc. At the beginning, we were also a bit naive, right? We wanted to give a lot back to the users that referred us and to the Bitcoiners that referred us. So the first version of the referral program was you get 0.5% of whatever the people that you bring invest forever. So if you bring someone that invests 1K into Bitcoin, you get €5. And if he does that every month, you get that every month forever. So that was basically half of the revenue we make.
Of your margin, right? I can imagine.
So at the beginning, when we had a few hundred users, that was fine. We didn't make any revenue anyway, and we didn't think about profitability or whatever, right? But then, fast forward a few years, we hit 100,000 users and like maybe 20,000 monthly active users, and monthly maybe, I don't know, 20 million or something volume. And then all of a sudden we started spending like 6 digits a month just on these referral commissions. So we then had a CFO that looked at all this and said, this doesn't scale.
It wasn't happy. Like, the CFO wasn't happy.
People never make money if we should continue like that, right? And so we're a business. We need to eventually make money. So I had this discussion, what can we do, et cetera. And we grew pretty fast, so we needed to do something quickly. Otherwise, we were just bleeding more and more cash, right? And so we decided to cap this at 3 months. So the program stayed the same. You still get 0.5% of whatever the person you bring invests, but only for 3 months, and then it stops. We thought that's great. It was great for us, for the business. So finally, we could kind of control this cash outflow and make some money. But then the community didn't like that. All the influencers, the affiliates, the ambassadors, the active users that brought a lot of clients, and every month they earned something from it. They, of course, hated that, right? And so there was a big shitstorm also. A lot of people stopped using the app. And this was tough. It was actually in the end just a wrong decision, because we didn't think it through. We didn't think about what will this do with these people, right?
Mm.
What will their reaction be? But for last year, this was what you described. This was the program. Now we changed it again, and now I think we really thought it through, and we found a great model where the fee is 1%. If you use a referral code, you get 10% discount. And for the one that brings the person, gets 10% also from the fees.
Yeah.
So basically now you don't get 0.5% on everything that the person you bring invests, but 0.1%. So you get less, but you get it forever again. Because we talked to a lot of these affiliates, influencers, and referral people. We asked them, and actually 80% of them said, I don't care if I get less. I just want it forever.
Yeah.
Like what they didn't like is that it stops after 3 months.
Yeah.
And so that was the crucial insight that we now implemented. And now everyone seems to be very happy.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to see that you listen to your clients. And I have to say, I also prefer the new model. I understand, of course, that everyone prefers the original one, but that was not sustainable. So I wanted to get back to you also mentioned revenues and stuff. I just want to get a rough idea, and also how many Bitcoins you actually sell every month. So I'm not sure if you have these numbers like per month or per year. How many Bitcoins are being bought via Relay?
I think we posted about it around Christmas or a bit before Christmas last year. And then it was, I think, around 12.5K. So probably at the end of the year, it was maybe like 13K. Bitcoin. So it's more than 1,000 Bitcoin every month for sure. But I would have to go back and look into it. But I think that's what I remember.
Yeah.
So more than 1,000 a month.
But that shows already that we are talking about quite big numbers here, right? So if we say like 13,000, let's make it very simple, 100K. It was, of course, less on average last year, but then we are, so 13,000 times 100K. And let's immediately take the 1% because that's what sticks with you, right? There should be like 30 million in the end, roughly, revenues. Of course, I would assume that numbers, fees change a bit between business, private, and the retail business.
And depending on the volume as well. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So is my 13 million guess, is it probably a bit too high or is it roughly?
Yeah, I think it assumes that Bitcoin was 100K the whole
year. Exactly. Right? That's why it was a bit too high.
The probably. Average price probably more like 50, 60K.
Yeah. So we are with 6, 7 million then.
Yeah, I think that could be around right there.
Nice. And I mean, and you did a funding round in December, I believe, right? For 12 million. So I also wanted to spend a couple of minutes on that because I assume the VCs were, of course, looking at your numbers already. I think this round was led by Ego Death Capital, which is a quite well-known VC in the crypto space. I think they have like a couple of OGs in there, like Jeff Booth, Lynn Alden. So how was it? I guess you interacted a lot with these people. What was the experience like? I mean, I also did that a couple of years ago. I was thrown into that M&A business. I did a couple of deals. And without kind of a lot of experience before, it's a whole different world, right? And I guess it was similar for you. I guess you don't have an M&A background. And now as a CEO, having to sit there at a table, like negotiating with experienced VCs, how was that?
Yeah, fortunately, it was not my first rodeo. We raised, now in total, we raised around 20 million. So we raised around 8, 9 million before already in three rounds. But every round is different. And this one, of course, was the biggest one. So it was also the whole due diligence was really, really crazy. We talked about the effort that it is before of getting a license. It's kind of similar to getting a funding round done. There's a lot of due diligence from different investors that are interested. There's a lot of documentation you have to produce, of course, like a pitch deck, financial model, budgeting, all the numbers, all the contracts, all the policies, everything. You have this whole data room where we had like hundreds of documents that investors that were interested could deep dive and then they ask questions. You have calls with them. You have negotiations, as you said. Some are interested, but then they drop out and then it's a lot of work, but I'm really grateful that the result was good. It was a half a year of brutal hard working for myself and a few other team members, especially the CFO as well. But we got it done in like half a year, which is not self-evident for a round of more than 10 million. Usually it takes longer. It takes like 1 year. Super happy also to have these amazing investors on board, right? As you said, Ego Death Capital that took the lead. The guys around Jeff Booth, Lynn Alden, Preston Pish, and of course Andy Pitt and Nicole Juga, who's been maybe a bit less well known, but also like great Bitcoiners, great people. And then we had the Plan B fund, you know, the whole Lugano conference, you know, and program Plan B. They have now a VC fund. So the Swiss Bitcoin angle we have in there as well. We had Solid Group, who's a gold broker. Company that have invested, I think, 2.5 million in the round as well. So it's interesting to have this kind of gold versus digital, physical gold versus digital gold partnership here as well in this round. And then TimeChain participated again, which they were already in the cap table before. They're also a Bitcoin only VC fund based in London and New York. And so we have this set of global Bitcoin-oriented VCs in the mix now. And super happy about that.
Yeah. I mean, very cool. Now you have all this money. Have you communicated the valuation at which you raised that money?
I think so. It's the 72 million post-money valuation.
Okay, very nice. So you have at least 12 million additional cash on your bank account now. So maybe as a last question, like, what are the plans for 2025 and beyond? I mean, I can imagine the license has cost some money, but also any new products, features, or do you say we want to go all in on the business or on the private side next year? What are the plans for 2025?
Yeah, so initially the plan was just to put all into Bitcoin, right? But that hasn't been accepted by the board. No kidding. We did invest a little bit in Bitcoin, and we are also pursuing a Bitcoin treasury strategy for the business, which is very nice to see that we're actually now starting to, every month we pile up the amount of Bitcoin we hold on the business as well. But in overall, of course, the main goal is to become profitable, to grow further. To become profitable this year, and this EU expansion is like super critical for that, so that we can grow further, do another 2-3x in terms of volume and revenue and users this year, and in a profitable way. We want to grow sustainably, profitably, where the money really will go is mostly into the product. So the mobile app, there will be several new features like the savings pockets, for example, so that you can also save, have an auto savings plan for your kids, for example. This is what customers really are asking for. And then, you know, improving just the wallet, the Lightning wallet feature, for example, to introduce Face ID, so it's harder for people to lose their precious Bitcoin, to connect hardware wallets smoothly, so you can within a few clicks connect one or several hardware wallets to your app and then basically navigate all your Bitcoin from one mobile app. And then, as you said, we will invest a lot in the Relay private and business part. We have just launched to a small set of high net worth individual clients this web app. And we will kind of roll it out also to business clients and high net worth individual clients, eventually maybe even to retail clients if they want to use the web app as well. So a lot will go into product. We are a product-led company. We want to build more exciting features for the people so that we can attract more people and they stay with us. And that's the goal, right? To excite people with this super easy product to make Bitcoin more accessible. Number two then is, of course, growth, marketing, sales. Once we have this MiCA license, there is a lot of potential for different platforms, collaborations with maybe sports teams, conferences, influencers. We will invest a lot in.
Well, that's the Bitpanda strategy. You're also going to grab some big football clubs.
Well, they are playing Champions League.
Right? Yeah,
after that we will play maybe second or third league. But yeah, we will try to do stuff like that. But no, mainly it's also going to podcasts, you know, sponsoring, stuff like that. And a lot of just growth marketing, paid advertising on different platforms like Meta, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Google, YouTube. There's a lot you can do with just paid advertising, which we so far cannot do in EU countries. And then Apple App Store, or also Google Play Store ads, and it's a lot of ads. We have a great marketing team that will be happy to spend a few millions on these growth tactics, and they actually work. And then last but not least, the third bucket that will grab a lot of this money is again regulatory licensing, legal compliance. This will go on, right? Because it doesn't stop when you have the license. It's very expensive to get the license. It's also expensive to maintain and hold the license, both in Switzerland and in the EU. And then we want to spend some money and effort also to you know, expand further and get licensed in the UK and then maybe in the Middle East and then, you know, eventually the whole world.
Yeah. Julian, I have many, many more questions here on my list. So you definitely have to come back. And maybe it's even interesting, like in a year or so after you have then went through the first stages of your European expansion, to listen in again how it's going with you. I also would have comments and questions on a potential B2B strategy, like this whole topic of UTXO management is of course an interesting thing we could talk about. But I suggest that we leave it here for now. So thanks a lot for being our guest today and for being so open about Relay, but also about yourself personally. And yeah, dear listeners, if you like this episode, please make sure to subscribe and share it with a friend. Now, especially, of course, your English-speaking friends, or at least those who can understand English in any European country. It might be interesting because Relay is coming. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks, Julian, again. And then until next time, bye-bye.
Thank you, Alex. Bye, guys.
The views expressed are solely the personal opinions of the hosts and are provided for informational purposes only. This podcast does not offer financial or investment advice. Always conduct your own research and make well-informed decisions before investing. Please be aware that the hosts and guests may hold cryptocurrencies or digital assets discussed in this episode.